A well-regulated militia be necessary to the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. Now, despite the 405 area code on my head here, we're not going to be talking about Oklahoma today. I wanted to wear my new hat. Anyway, we're going to be talking about what's going on in North Carolina with a permitless carry. Paul Vallone from Grassroots North Carolina going to be with us here in just a moment or two. Now, I know I said on Monday's show that we'll be talking about the Supreme Court oral arguments in Smith & Wesson versus Mexico, which took place yesterday. Honestly, I was kind of expecting there to be more debate during the oral arguments, but I think we could be looking at a 9-0 decision in favor of Smith & Wesson and the U.S. gun makers and against Mexico in its $10 billion lawsuit against many major manufacturers here. Even the liberal wing of the court seemed unimpressed with the arguments presented by Mexico and U.S. Gun control activists that these companies are aiding and abetting the drug cartels, that they are the proximate cause of cartel violence because they make a product that is not just legal to possess, but again, protected by the Constitution, that they sell that product to distributors. Those distributors sell the product to retailers. The retailers sell the product to individual consumers, some of whom may break the law and illegally traffic those guns to Mexico, where the cartels can get a hold of those guns and then use them in crimes against other cartel members or the Mexican public. Mexico says it's the gun maker's fault that that happens and that there is something that they can do, which, by the way, is voluntarily adopting Mexico-style gun laws, right? They can do this on their own and they could stop this cartel violence in its tracks. Again, even the progressive wing of the court seemed unimpressed by that argument. And you had, and I don't mean one or two members. I mean, Justice Kagan, Justice Sotomayor, Justice Jackson all expressed skepticism at Mexico's argument at one point or another during the hour-long oral arguments. And of course, the conservative wing of the court also seemed very skeptical of this. You've got the Protection of Lawful Commerce and Arms Act, which is designed to stop these junk lawsuits, blaming gun makers for the actions of criminals. That's exactly what Mexico is trying to do here. And you know, it's important to remember, the U.S. district judge overseeing this case originally threw out Mexico's complaint. The First Circuit Court of Appeals reinstated the complaint and said, Mexico can argue that the manufacturers are aiding and abetting cartel violence. They can try to convince a jury or a judge that U.S. gun makers are the proximate cause of cartel violence. They remanded this case back down to U.S. District Judge Dennis Saylor, who took another look at the case and last year said, yeah, you know what? I just don't think that that's accurate. And he dismissed all of the claims against the gun makers, at least those outside of the state of Massachusetts where this case was filed. Smith & Wesson is still a party to the case because they do have that presence in Massachusetts. I believe that there's a distributor who also has a little bit of a footprint in Massachusetts that Saylor said, all right, the case can move forward against these two individuals, but these other – or these two companies, but these other companies that have no relationship to Massachusetts – why should they be a part of this lawsuit? So he did not rule against Mexico the second time around on Protection of Lawful Commerce and Arms Act grounds. But I think that's exactly what the Supreme Court is going to do here. And that doesn't even get into Mexico's responsibility in stopping cartel violence, right? The Hugs Not Bullets campaign adopted by past President Obrador. That strategy, if you want to call it that, that has been embraced by Claudia Sheinbaum, the current president of Mexico, doesn't even touch the corruption within the Mexican government and the Mexican military that is diverting legal sales of firearms to Mexican governments into the hands of cartel members. Like, you don't even have to go there to reject Mexico's lawsuit. All you have to do is look at the plain language of the Protection of Lawful Commerce and Arms Act. And you can look at Mexico's argument and you can say, well, no, because if if we were to assume this, and I think Chief Justice Roberts kind of brought this up. I think he was the one who mentioned this yesterday. That if we were to take Mexico's argument to its logical conclusion, then why couldn't you sue Budweiser for distributing alcohol in college towns where minors may be more likely to drink and illegally acquire alcohol than in some other communities? Why couldn't you hold, Stellantis or Toyota responsible for the acts of drunk drivers because they sell a product knowing that, or even speeders, right? Because they sell a product, a legal product, knowing that some individual, some portion of the people who purchase their products are going to break the law with those products, right? They're going to drive fast. They're going to drive impaired. They're going to get into accidents. They're going to hurt people. Now, that's not the fault of the automakers any more than the criminal misuse of a firearm is the fault of a gun maker. And thankfully, again, it looks like not only does a majority of the Supreme Court understand that. Again, I think it's more likely than not that we're going to see a 9-0 decision. And Mexico's going to end up on the losing end of that opinion. So that's my prediction. We'll see what happens. We should get a decision by the end of June of this year. And I don't think it's going to go well for Mexico or the U.S. gun control activists who are supporting this litigation. All right. So now let's turn our attention to what's going on in North Carolina. Permitless carry. Because there is a there are a couple of issues here. So there's a problem with the math. And that North Carolina does not have any longer a veto-proof majority of Republican lawmakers, and you've got a Democrat governor. That's one problem. But I think that there's also some confusion about what this bill does and does not change under existing North Carolina statute. And I hope that that confusion does not lead to the untimely demise of permitless carry now that the Republican leadership in both the House and Senate are finally on board. So let's break it down with Paul Vallone of Grassroots North Carolina. Take a look and a listen. Paul, thanks very much for coming back on the program. It's good to see you again, sir.
Well, thank you, Cam. I appreciate you having me.
Absolutely. So where are we right now with the fight for permitless carry in North Carolina this session?
Well, we have two bills, House Bill 5 and Senate Bill 50, both of which are basically identical for our purposes. HB 5 has legislator carry in it, but that is not relevant to us, so we don't take a position on it. And basically, these are the same bill that was originally drafted in House Bill 189. It was pulled from the floor calendar in the North Carolina House in the last session of the General Assembly and never got action. And it's also the same version that was introduced and passed the North Carolina House and died in the Senate in 2017 is House Bill 746. And so this is not a new concept for us. I like to use the phrase permitless carry rather than constitutional carry, because pure constitutional carry probably doesn't exist. We have 29 states with 29 different iterations of this law. And so I feel the words permitless carry are probably more appropriate. What the bills do basically is, in essence, they offer people the ability to carry concealed without a permit, provided they would otherwise qualify for a permit if they applied. In other words, they don't have any disqualifying things like recent DUIs, disqualifying misdemeanors or felonies, active substance addiction, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And it requires them to adhere to the same rules and laws that that concealed handgun permit holders do in terms of campus carry, in terms of other posted property in other restricted areas. The problem we've had is I started getting negative input on the bill telling me it was dangerous and it disarmed people. Well, when I looked into it, I found out that an outfit called Washington Gun Law, run by William Kirk, has been telling people that it's not pure constitutional carry, which is a given. Okay, we know that. And he's also telling people it's dangerous and that it disarms people. Now, that's where the misinformation comes in.
Okay. Because
the truth is that you can't disarm somebody who's already disarmed. Nobody in this state can carry concealed without a permit. We are offering the ability for most people to carry concealed unless they are, for example, imbibing alcohol. Now, exactly as it is for concealed handgun permits. So he somehow equates this to being disarmed, and I'm not really sure what the logic is behind that.
Sorry, I watched Kirk's video, and I will be honest with you, I've not had the opportunity to speak with Mr. Kirk in the past. I know that he is, you know, a generally trusted voice on 2A issues. And I did notice that in his video, he said, I'm not sure what the existing law is in North Carolina. And I think that's a really big caveat, right? Because what you're telling me is that what changes with these bills, again, is the ability for somebody who could obtain a carry license to carry without a carry license. But there are already restrictions in North Carolina law, right? So I know, for instance, one of the things that Kirk took issue with is language talking about individuals who are addicted to, I think it's controlled substances or alcohol, would not be able to carry. Now, I assume, Paul, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I assume that that language was basically taken from existing statute in North Carolina.
From the concealed, all they did, this new section 14.415.35, I believe it is, all it does is duplicate the language from the concealed handgun permit language.
So Kirk's objection was
nothing is new in any of this.
Okay, so Kirk's objection was, you know, under federal law, if you're an unlawful user of drugs, you can't possess a firearm, but it doesn't say anything about alcohol. But again, North Carolina law already does say that, right? That's the other provision I think that he took issue with is if you are convicted of a DUI, you cannot would not be able to lawfully carry without a permit for 3 years, but you're saying you also would not be able to obtain a carry permit in North Carolina for 3 years.
That is absolutely correct. See, the important things I want people to know, okay, and I'm the first one to admit that these are not perfect bills. These are the bills that I think we can pass right now and grab something, okay? And basically, what people need to know is there are no new restrictions in this law that don't already apply to concealed carry, okay? All they do is apply the same standards for permitted carry, and now they apply them to permitless carry. That's it. That's all there is.
So, I mean, if folks have objections about, you know, the DUI provision, if they have objections to the word alcohol in there, that's a separate issue, right? Because that's something that encompasses all of North Carolina carry law,
That's correct. And if I tried to add, gee, let's let people drink and carry firearms, legislators will run screaming for the exits, I guarantee you.
Sure. Well, absolutely. And, you know, listen, I mean, I would say just from a practical measure, from a practical standpoint, I like a bourbon or two every now and then. But it's one thing to say, you know, hypothetically, if you drink, you could be disarmed. A court or a prosecutor would actually have to prove not just that you drink, but again, that you have a substance abuse problem, right?
Correct.
And that's the only way that that's really going to come up, if you are applying for a permit, is if there is some sort of record of you doing something criminally while you are intoxicated that would indicate again that you have a problem with alcohol. Hypothetically, I guess this could be an issue, but practically speaking, I don't see that as cause for alarm or cause for concern. I certainly don't think that it is going to lead to the mass disarmament of every North Carolinian who enjoys a beer. here's the practical reality. Republicans don't have a veto-proof majority anymore.
Correct.
You are one vote shy. You're one seat shy of a veto-proof majority in the state house. Is that right?
That is a correct statement, yes.
Okay. So, I mean, let's just look at the math here, right? In order to get this bill across the finish line, you're going to need, every Republican, right? You're either going to need to get a Democrat on board or you're going to have to wait until a Democrat calls out sick for work, lowering the threshold, right?
Exactly right. That's a perfect explanation.
Yes. Because Governor Josh Stein is going to veto this bill. We know that he's going to veto this bill. So you need that veto-proof majority if you want this bill to become law. That's just the reality. Right. Yep. And so when you talk about, well, if I start trying to make underlying changes to the concealed carry statute, to the concealed carry language, I'm going to lose lawmakers. I think that you're right. And and by the way, I am sure. Now, I'm not an attorney. I don't know the laws of all 50 states right offhand, but I am very confident in stating that in the vast majority of states, it is already illegal for you to possess a firearm in public while you are intoxicated.
Interestingly, in North Carolina, to the best of my knowledge, and I'm not a lawyer, this is not legal advice.
Okay.
To the best of my knowledge, there are no statutes prohibiting you from imbibing alcohol while carrying openly.
Okay.
Odd though that may be.
Right. Well, there are some, there are always some quirks in our Second Amendment language and the statutes there. So, you know, again, I'm with you, Paul. I think Bill Kirk generally does a good job. But I think, again, that caveat that he wasn't aware of what the existing law in North Carolina was, I think it's really important to keep in mind.
What I wish he had done is I wish he had asked me first, okay, before putting out this video. I mean, we're all over the place. It's not like I can't be found. But the important thing is, and what I want people to know, is the reason this is a giant leap forward is that it removes the need for governmental possession, governmental permission to carry a firearm concealed. That's the important point. And we can go back after this, and we will go back after this, and start removing restrictions, just as we've done for the past 30 years on concealed carry. And we've removed many, if not most, of those restrictions in the concealed carry law. So we need to get this sucker on the books so we can go back and start whacking at it. But this is what we can pass right now. It's not perfect, but it removes the need for governmental permission to carry concealed firearms. That's the reason we need this bill to pass.
Okay. Paul, listen, I really do appreciate you coming on the program. Any idea? I mean, first of all, I got to say, I was shocked that Phil Berger, right? He's the Senate President Pro Tem. I was shocked after our conversations over the past couple of years that Senator Berger is actually sponsoring constitutional carry this year. That to me was very interesting. So
I know Phil Berger, and here's the thing. Berger wants to do things on his own time. He decided he wasn't going to do it last session. And by the way, he runs a tight ship in the Senate. The senators vote lockstep. Republicans vote lockstep with whatever he wants.
Okay.
So he wasn't going to bring it up for the next session, but he did this with restaurant carry. He refused to consider it one session. In the next session, they bums rushed it through the Senate and it became law. Okay. So, I guess that's just how Berger works in terms of allocating stuff. But yes, he is a co-sponsor of this bill, and for which we thank him, obviously.
Absolutely. How do you feel right now about the prospects of this? Do you think that that the Republicans, it sounds to me like the Senate isn't maybe as much of a concern, but again, the House is where you don't have the veto proof majority. How do you feel about the House right now? Do you think you've got the Republican caucus in line? Are there a couple of lawmakers who you're concerned about?
I think, there are some lawmakers we're concerned about. I think we have about a 60-40 chance of passing this bill.
Okay.
But what we're going to start doing now is we're going to start focusing on Republicans who have dropped votes in previous sessions. Okay. Those will be our swing voters, the ones most marginal. And we keep a very detailed track of their voting record back to 1994. Okay. So we know who's voted for what. And when legislators drop bills, that means they're not solid, or drop votes are not solid on our issue. And we're going to begin focusing on those with legislative alerts telling people to inundate their offices with calls and emails. And for anybody who wants to do that, and we do want people to do that, go to grnc.org, and on the homepage, you will see our alerts, and you will also see a link where you could sign up for legislative alerts. We won't dun you with requests for money constantly. And you will get time-critical legislative alerts that tell you who to contact and what they need to hear. grnc.org.
I can tell you I get those alerts. I am not inundated or spammed with requests for donations, but there is a lot of good information there. So, Paul, listen, I appreciate you coming on the program with the update. Would love to have you back anytime. And again, hopefully we can get this bill across the finish line. As you say, is this, a picture perfect legislation? Nope, but that's not the world that we live in. This is how the sausage gets made. And this would be a dramatic improvement over the status quo in North Carolina.
Agreed. And thank you, Cam, for allowing me to get the information out. I appreciate it.
Absolutely, Paul. Anytime, sir. Paul Vallone joins us from Grassroots, North Carolina, here on Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My thanks to Paul for joining me on the program. And by the way, I'm not trying to throw any shade towards William Kirk. I think there are a couple of things going on. As I said, in Kirk's video, he said, I'm not really familiar, not sure what the existing law is. Well, now we know, right? But also, when you're looking at things from a purely legal perspective, you may come to a different conclusion than you're looking at things through a political lens. From a pure 2A standpoint, is it problematic that there are, statutes that say, okay, if you do something wrong, even if it doesn't involve a firearm, you could lose your Second Amendment rights? I would take issue with that. Now, I'm sure that the lawmakers who put this in question, who put the statute in place, would say, listen, if you're irresponsible behind the wheel of a car that shows that you're irresponsible with a firearm, or you could be likely to be irresponsible with a firearm, it's not a lifetime deprivation, right? It's a 3-year period. So if you've proven yourself to be responsible once again, then you can regain your right to carry. That's a debate for another day. It is. But the political reality versus, what we would like to see, legally speaking, from a clean bill. Those two things, and it's not just with this particular piece of legislation in North Carolina, those two things are inherently going to be in conflict in almost any piece of legislation that you can think of. And there is that adage in politics that you don't let perfect be the enemy of good, right? So the odds of a perfect, pure constitutional carry bill becoming law in North Carolina this year, 0%. 0%. It's not going to happen. The odds of permitless carry, as written, becoming law in North Carolina this year, I mean, honestly, maybe 51%. Again, it's tough, right? Just because of the math that we talked about. But you got a better chance of getting this bill, a good bill in place. And then, as Paul says, going back and improving the bill once it is law, you've got a realistic chance of that happening. You have zero chance of a bill that revises the underlying language in existing statute about DUIs, about substance abuse that includes alcoholism. That's not going to get changed. That's not going to get revised. If for no other reason than lawmakers are going to have to explain to their non-gun-owning constituents why permitless carry is a good idea in the first place. If they were to also have to explain why they are removing language that says alcoholics cannot legally get a concealed carry license, that's asking a lot for these lawmakers, right? And I just don't think it's going to happen. So, this is a good bill. It would be a substantial improvement. As Paul says, is it perfect? No. But is it going to disarm people willy-nilly? No. It's not going to do that either. All right. On to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. Let's start there with a case out of California. Here's the headline from My News LA. Convicted killer back in jail on weapons charges. Yeah. Okay. So, let's talk about this. A 21-year-old man who was convicted of fatally stabbing his mom when he was just 13 years of age, charged Monday with possessing weapons in Anaheim. Now, keep in mind that this individual was adjudicated in the juvenile court system, right? So the longest that he could have been held behind bars would have been until he turned 21. So you could argue that this isn't really a true case of recidivism. The state held him as long as they could. He is a little bit more than that, though. Ike Nicholas Souzer, charged with possession of a short-barreled shotgun and rifle and possession of a firearm by a felon, all felonies. He was released from jail on February 18th after he completed a probation violation. Arrested near the scene of a shooting that Friday in Los Angeles, where a transient had shot another transient who was expected to survive. Souzer's not a suspect in that shooting, but he was stopped by a police officer near the scene, and that's when he was found in possession of the short-barreled shotgun. Souzer was in jail on this probation violation because he had pleaded guilty back in August, or at least admitted back in August of last year, that he violated his probation when he failed to tell his probation officer where he was and basically didn't check in with his probation officer, absconding from probation. Orange County Superior Court Judge Craig Robison told Souzer in August of 2024 that he would have to complete this 3-year sentence that had been handed down in another conviction in October of 2023. When Souzer was caught with a shank while in jail in Santa Ana, California. According to MyNews LA, the 3-year sentence had been structured so that Souzer would be freed a few months later, but he ran afoul of the law again on January 21st of 2024 when he painted a mural of his girlfriend who had passed away on a freeway underpass in Orange County. He pleaded guilty in March of last year, was sentenced to 90 days for the graffiti, placed on 2 years of formal probation. He was then released because he had credit for time behind bars. But because of the case involving the shank, he was ordered to stay at basically a halfway house and obey all of the rules and curfew there. He was being taken to a transitional housing location in Santa Ana, California in March of last year, but he left, didn't come back. He was actually arrested at the border. Prosecutors had argued for an additional year behind bars for Souzer, which would have made the punishment for having the shank in jail 4 years, but that didn't happen. And then, of course, the reason why Souzer was in custody to begin with is because back in 2017, when he was 13 years old, Souzer was convicted of killing his 47-year-old mom. He, during trial, escaped juvenile hall. In 2019, he was arrested the next day. He made headlines again in April of 2022 when he removed his electronic monitoring device and escaped custody at a halfway house in Santa Ana. Convicted in December of 2021 for attacking 3 correctional officers. So this isn't just a case of somebody convicted of a juvenile crime who was released, you know, when they turned 21 and then has now been arrested again on weapons charges. This is a guy who, since he was released from custody for murdering his mom as a teenager, has continually violated the law time and time again, and has received basically no punishment, no consequences for his actions since he became an adult. And that is why Ike Souzer is the subject of today's recidivist report. All right, on to today's Armed Citizen story from Indianapolis, Indiana, WISH-TV, reporting no charges filed in connection with a shooting at an Amazon warehouse. This took place last December. Isaac Riley was shot and killed there in the Amazon warehouse parking lot in Indianapolis. But as WISH reports, the individual who shot Riley will not be facing charges because police have determined that he was acting in self-defense. According to the Indianapolis TV station, the investigation revealed that the shooting started with an argument in a break room between the armed citizen and Mr. Riley, who was not scheduled to be working that day. Riley started arguing with the gun owner, saying, "If you go outside, I'm going to dust your ass." According to police, the armed citizen tried to leave to avoid a fight, tried to extricate himself from that situation. He got some, he was very angry, maybe about being there on his day off, but for whatever reason, the armed citizen was like, "All right, I'm going to go. I'm going to leave. Take my exit, stage right there," right? So he's outside, he's waiting on his ride to show up, and then Riley apparently follows him outside. According to the Hancock County Prosecutor's Office, Riley, quote, aggressively closed distance on the unnamed shooter, creating fear of injury in the unnamed shooter, which is when the armed citizen pulled a firearm. Riley allegedly said, "I ain't worried about no gun. and then reached into his pants as if he was drawing a weapon of some sort. That is when the armed citizen fired three shots, killing Riley. He then placed the gun on the ground. He waited for police to arrive. Hancock County Prosecutor's Office said that shooting was justified under Indiana self-defense laws. Prosecutor's Office said, given the totality of the evidence in this case, it is clear that the unnamed shooter made multiple attempts to disengage from Riley. It is also clear that at the time of the shooting, the unnamed shooter had reason to believe that force was necessary to prevent serious bodily injury to himself from Riley. Hamilton County Prosecutor's Office, Hancock County Prosecutor's Office and the Sheriff's Department thanking Amazon for cooperating during the investigation. Again, the armed citizen cooperating as well. And, you know, this is another one of those just senseless stories that we see. This didn't have to be a defense of gun use. If Mr. Riley had decided, as pissed off and as angry as I am, I'm not going to take it out of my coworker. I'm not going to follow him outside after threatening him, by the way. He'd just gone about his day. Heck, if he had gone to his boss and said, you know what? This crap isn't worth it. I'm out of here. Take this job and shove it, in the words of Johnny Paycheck. No story whatsoever. Mr. Riley would be alive today. No investigation would have taken place. He might be looking for another job, but he'd be alive. I know I don't have to tell you this, but we got folks in this country. We got a lot of folks in this country with some anger management issues. And whether it's these, you know, road rage incidents, whether it's something like this, man, take a breath, count to 10, move on. So you have a bad day. You don't want to be at work. All right. Deal with it. Somebody cut you off in traffic. You know what? Again, take a deep breath, turn up your music, sing along. You'll forget about it in 2 minutes. It is so distressing to see these individuals lose their lives because they cannot keep their emotions and their tempers in check. And it's sad, man. It really is. We need to make America resilient again, and to make Americans resilient again, able to handle the slightest bit of adversity without losing their ever-loving minds. Anyway, I am glad in this case that the armed citizen will not be facing charges. I am saddened for Mr. Riley's family that he lost his life. And again, what was a completely justified shooting, but an incident that did not need to happen because Mr. Riley could have simply turned and walked away at any point in time. All right, finally today, on to our good deed of the day, in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. A woman in Ohio rescued from a house fire thanks to a good Samaritan and several of her neighbors as well. This was in Burlington, Ohio. Happened on Monday. House fire along 4th Street and Washington Avenue. According to WSAZ-TV, Good Samaritan was able to pull the woman from the house, although he suffered second-degree burns himself. Once outside of the home, fellow neighbors assisted in helping this woman out, as well as the Good Samaritan at that point. Richard Cremens lives down the street from where the fire broke out. He works for the Chesapeake Fire Department as well. He said he saw the heavy black smoke, and he leapt into action. There were two other residents, he said, who were working to rescue the woman inside. He said everybody was standing outside, and I asked, is there anybody inside the house? And they said, yeah, there's a lady inside the house. I said, well, did anybody call the fire department? They said, yeah, we already called the fire department. He said, I turn around. The house is fully engulfed in flames and smoke coming out of every window, every door, the eaves. He said he went up to two men and asked, can you help get this one out? He said the two guys pull her out. They pull her across the road into the field. He said, well, I'm watching them pull her out. I made sure that nothing happened to them. He said, I looked back and the whole roof, porch roof, just fell. One of the men had actually gone back inside the house to get the woman. The others assisted outside. Both the Good Samaritan and the resident of the home taken to the hospital with burns, but it looks like they are going to be okay. Creeman says, I'm glad we got her out when we did. She is still alive and still around. They don't know what started the fire, but this, again, could have been so much worse were it not for the quick thinking of these Good Samaritans who came to that woman's aid at, again, substantial risk to their own life and limb. So in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. Those anonymous Good Samaritans there in Burlington, Ohio, we thank you for your very, very good deed. And that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. And I want to thank you, as always, for being a part of the program. Looking forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow. Not sure what our topic will be, not sure who our guest will be, but I know that it will involve your right to keep and bear arms. Hopefully some good news. I'd like to talk about something other than the threat to our right to keep and bear arms, but there are a lot of those threats out there right now, so we got to keep you covered in that end, too. Be sure to check out BearingArms.com throughout the day. Keeping you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. If you like what you see, would also encourage you to become a VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum member. All you have to do is use the promo code FIGHT, and you can take an incredible amount off of the regular price of a VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum membership. You'll get all kinds of benefits with every tier of your membership. You'll also be supporting the independent pro-Second Amendment journalism that we're doing at Bearing Arms, and I certainly do appreciate that. Have a great rest of your Hump Day Wednesday. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.